Good morning, everyone. Good morning here to those of you in the studio. If I haven't had a chance to say hi, good morning. And good morning to everybody at home. We're starting the full day four, I guess. Yeah, day four, something like that. So this morning, we're going to start off with the Vijnana Maya kosha, which is the kosha of cognitions and thoughts and beliefs and memories and images. So that's what we're heading into today. And it is kosha. It's step seven of the 10-step protocol. In order to really open into this particular part of the practice, we're working with the second phase of mindfulness here. So this is, as we were talking about a couple days ago, you know, the first phase is to focus our attention and to be able to concentrate. And with the second phase, that's where we become one-pointed with our concentration. So we can concentrate for longer and longer periods of time so that we can stay focused and meet whatever we're going to proactively engage, because remember, that's a bit more subtle and a bit more sticky to be able to stay with in an embodied way. So just like we meet everything as a messenger, we're meeting our cognitions in meditation as a messenger. So whatever wants to come through and be seen, we're seeing that as allies and messengers, not enemies that we have to be at war with or to fight with, but how can we really meet and welcome in our thoughts, our beliefs, images and memories as they arise? Because the thought is, I mean, yes, occasionally there are things that come through in meditation that we say they're pretty much like window shopping, you know, they're just passing by and we can feel into them and they're like, no, I don't really have that much that I need to share with you. You know, I just needed to be seen. And then they kind of go on by. But as we know, there are other ones that are doing a lot more than window shopping. And those are the ones that we want to invite in and possibly have a cup of tea with and really meet them as a messenger, as a guest in our guest house. So then in that regard, just like with emotions, with our thoughts and our beliefs, we're not looking them as positive or negative. They're here to reveal information, right? So it's here to help us see, are we in harmony? Are we in sync with ourselves or with life? Or are we out of sync, out of harmony? Is something off here? And if so, what do I need to do to come back into harmony? And that way we can thank it, can't we? A challenging belief or a difficult thought, in the end, if we are able to realize that it was here to reveal something to us, and by staying with it and coming back into harmony with ourselves, we can actually be grateful for the messenger, potentially, or thankful. When we go through a challenging phase in life, it's never very skillful to say, oh, but you're going to gain so much wisdom from this when somebody's going through the heart of it, right? That never feels good. But we may find in our own way after we've worked through something that in fact, there was a way that it was that we did learn something, right? But we need to meet all of it, even the parts that don't feel so great, right? So we can't just jump to the end and be like, oh, there's going to be a silver lining. That just sounds like a platitude. That's not what I mean. I mean that when we really go through the fire and we realize later, oh yeah, there was a reason or there was something that I learned out of this, right? And so if we can approach each of them with that sense of curiosity and that sense of openness, and that's the heart of welcoming, right? It's not that we accept it, meaning that we always agree with something or we are happy about it, but we allow it to be here just as it is, so that it can fully unpack. So then we have what I'm talking about here. If you're with me, just as a quick overview, then there's the Sankalpa, of cognitions and the vikalpa of cognitions. So that means that there are some cognitions that will bring us into that deeper sense of harmony, will touch into more of our essence of being, right? And the vikalpa is that which takes us away from that sense of harmony or that sense of being. So we're just watching, we're opening up, and we're welcoming those cognitions and seeing what unpacks. Because, you know, there can be a sense of degraded wisdom or that kernel of wisdom that's there even in something that we're really struggling with, right? So, excuse me, if I have a core belief that I'm not good enough and I stay more on the surface with that, then I may just struggle and suffer. But if I really unpack I'm not good enough in meditation, I may find that at the deeper heart of it, I realize that, wait a minute, there was a situation here that made me feel, I felt embarrassed or I had a bit of shame. If I go to the heart of that, I realize really there wasn't anything wrong in that moment. I perhaps was upset and said something unskillful, right, and hurtful, and I feel shame around that, or I feel embarrassed by that, or my heart hurts because of that. And now I can get to that deeper kernel of truth, which was, oh, I was hurt in that moment, and I wasn't going very quickly, and I said something, and now I realize, oh, I just need to make a repair. I need to go talk to that person, right? So the deeper kernel of wisdom in that moment is I did something that didn't feel good in the moment, and I'd like to go work that out with someone. And as soon as I do that, that may unravel the I'm not good enough. You know what I mean? It doesn't have the same hold on us. It's like, no, I was doing the best I could, and I was just had a bad moment, and I can go work that out with the other person. Or equally, it's just important for us to stay with that. You know, I have another example that I often share. I've had permission to share this at trainings where, you know, I've been, there was a phase in my marriage where we had a bit of conflict, and I was defending in that conflict and not realizing it. And I'm sure nobody else has ever dealt with conflict with their husband or partner. So I'm sure I'm the only one. But, you know, we all have these parts of that we have conflict with, right? That we can dance around, and it's like that core thing that we do. And he would try to talk to me in that moment of conflict about how he was feeling if he was hurt. So the place I would get tripped up is if he was hurt by something that I said or I did that I didn't intend in the way that it was received, right? The intention wasn't the same as the impact that it had on the other person. And I was defending and trying to help him. I was thinking I was listening to his feelings, but in the moment in our partnership, I wasn't truly listening to his feelings. I was trying to tell him all the ways that I loved him or I didn't mean to hurt him. And that came across as defensive. And he would share that with me. And it would be this part of the conflict that was really sticky. And I had this moment where I just paused. And I've been doing this practice for a few years. And I paused, and it was really challenging. And he was really struggling. He was really getting more and more upset because he wasn't feeling heard. And I just paused, and I realized, like, I felt this contraction in my body. And he had said this so much, I thought, well, maybe I should check this out. Maybe there's something to this, right? Maybe I should check this out. And then I felt this contraction, and I went in, and I realized that what was happening is I had this core belief that was getting triggered that I wasn't seeing on the surface. And because he was feeling hurt, I was feeling what was coming up for me is I'm unlovable. That somehow because he was hurt by something I was doing or not doing, it was triggering for me this old core wound of I'm unlovable. And so what I was responding to in that moment wasn't what he was telling me. I was responding to that core belief of I'm unlovable. That's what I was reacting to. And so in that moment, I was able to pause and say, you know what? I'm so sorry. I didn't luckily tell him, oh, guess what? I just found out, you know, like, that's why we say bracket, my friends. We bracket in life as well, because that just would have turned it into the Stephanie show. And now all of a sudden he's trying to tell me about his feelings. And I'm like, oh, but I just realized I'm feeling unlovable in this moment by you telling me this. Can we talk about that for a moment? Would it work well? So I bracketed that. And what I did do was I was able to say, I'm so sorry, you're right. I haven't been listening, because I realized I hadn't been listening. There was this whole barrier, right? There was like this armor that was up. I'm unlovable armor. Here it was. And he couldn't get through. There was no permeating through that wall, right? And so it was a little bit more translucent as soon as I saw it. And I was able to say, you know, can you tell me again? I know you're upset, but I realize that you're right. I haven't been listening. Can you tell me again? And then later on, we were able to talk about it when, you know, we were in a better space and he was able, right, to be there for me. And that didn't just happen one time, right? I had to see that over and over again. And then I had to meet that part of that sense of that core belief of I'm lovable. And that happens. Remember yesterday I was talking about interjects. So we all have these experiences when we're children and things that happen. And when we can't developmentally understand what's going on, either with our caregivers or core people in our life, teachers, coaches, grandparents, peers, right? And like I was saying, it's something, it doesn't have to be something that's said to us, although it could be, you know? We could be being told that we're bad, we're not good, we're constantly being berated and not being treated well, and that could turn into, there's something wrong with me. I'm not good enough. I'm unlovable. I'm not smart enough. I'm not blank enough, right? Fill in the blank. So it could be something that was said, but like I was saying yesterday, it could be what was not said. It could be neglect, being ignored, a natural introversion and shyness. And that we feel like we kind of blend in with the wallpaper, if that's just part of who we are, we're just not as extroverted the way that we're wired. And then if we don't have people in our environment that see that, that try to still connect, that lack of being seen or that lack of connection can also equally lead to interjects because of what's not been said. I'm not good enough. Nobody's paying attention to me. Right? There's something wrong with me. These are the core ones. I'm unlovable. I'm not okay. I don't belong. No one's ever going to understand me. I'll get lots of examples later when I do the meditation with you, and I'll get some examples. But these are classic, and these are cross-cultural. This is something that happens in other cultures as well. So these are archetypal beliefs that we pretty much, I haven't met anybody yet that's been able to get through life that hasn't stumbled across some core belief that we unpack throughout our lifetime. So we can meet them in meditation, and then we can work with opposites of belief. Right? There's different ways we can work with it, and I'm going to talk about that in a minute, because we can work with it in all the ways that we proactively engage emotions, but we can work with opposites. You know, I'm lovable, I'm unlovable, right? I'm never going to get this right. I'm doing the best I know how. And we can do continuums so that it's not just a polar opposite of a core belief. We do that more in level two. I don't belong. I accept myself as I am. Right? So we have these ways that we can perhaps work with these beliefs. And in meditation, maybe it's not as strong. It doesn't have the same strong hold on us when we can see these deeper kernels of where they came from and how they may not be true, how they're not serving us, especially when we compare that with the inner resource or with the sense of being, right? That we feel this part of us that's whole, that's complete just as it is. And then we feel into the core belief again and see how that wants to be seen. And then we feel our wholeness. And then we feel, right? We can go back and forth. And these can take years to fully unwind and to not have the same hold on us. They often come up with memories associated with them or different memories in our life or certainly emotions will co-arise with them. So these koshas, while they seem linear, remember, they're all happening simultaneously. That's why we can feel the manamaya, the anamaya. We can feel the sensation of a cognition while right along with it comes an emotion. Now we're with manamaya. And then we can feel a surge of energy or surge of heat. Anytime we feel something moving in the body, maybe something at first has felt contracted or like in one focal point, and then all of a sudden it's moving and it's shifting. That's when we're in pranamaya, right? That movement, that energetic movement of something. So they're all happening simultaneously. And, you know, you can recall, like, just as a quick overview, this is still the constructive phase, right? Because if we're meeting core beliefs, if we're meeting thoughts and cognitions, those are the things that are coming and going in our body-mind. And so we're coming to right relationship with it, to befriend all of these beliefs that we've taken ourselves to be. So that's the constructive phase, right? We're understanding how it's served us. How maybe it served us in ways that has been challenging and difficult, and how it's serving us now so that we can come home to our wholeness. And we hopefully can then come into greater harmony. Anytime that we come into our wholeness and we're moving beyond that sense of separation and we're opening into our more essential nature, now we're in the deconstructive phase, right? So anytime we're deconstructing that sense of separation and we're falling back into the wholeness of who we are, what's here that doesn't need to be healed, that would be the deconstructive phase. And that can spontaneously happen during any part of the practice. But if we've met a core belief, that happened in our co-meditation dyad spontaneously. Yesterday, when I had my co-meditation dyad with my partner, and at a certain point, there was just that sense of, oh, there's relief here, right? There was a sense, I don't have the words written down right in front of me, but there was that sense of, I was describing it, I think, yesterday as opening more out as the witness, and there was an expansiveness and an ease that was, right? That's spontaneous. That was starting to move beyond that sense of separation. That was the beginning of the deconstructive phase, deconstructing the sense of separation. We've got, we're going to be able to feel into the cognition. We're not denying it. And as we feel, and we meet it, we meet where it happens in our body, at a certain moment, our attention will be freed when it's been met fully and it's shared with us whatever it needs to share in that moment. And because remember, we'll have lots of cups of teas with and visitors or visits with these guests, right? But once it's released our attention because it's been met however much it needs to be met in this moment, now that's the disidentification. We felt into it. We're not separate from it because we can feel it. But yet here we are, we're distinct, and we start to feel ourselves as a witnessing presence, right? And here's the truth. When you fight with reality, you're always going to lose. So we're meeting what is to the degree that we can. We have the inner resource there so that if it starts to be a memory that comes through with a core belief or something and you start to get more flooded or uncomfortable, we've got that core belief there. Or the core belief. We've got the inner resource there, right? That's why we're working at the beginning to establish some sense of okayness as a minimum baseline so that we can rely on it. We could take a break. We're not here to flood ourselves. It's a very skillful practice that way. It supports us and your students to build that self-regulation. And that's the wisdom of how we can proactively engage, working with opposites, stepping back as a witness, right? Even the noting and feeling a sensation may allow us to have a bit of a break from the intensity of the conditioned way of our habitual thinking around something. So these are all built in so that we can break the fusion of over-identification. And we can start to open into this part of us that's deeply okay, that's whole and healed. Are there any questions about that before I continue on? Just about this kosha and anything I've shared? Yeah, we have a question here.
Okay, so you can pause me if you're going to get to this because I saw trauma later. But I'm sort of wondering, you described these like moments of being able to reflect back and say, okay, I felt shame in that moment, but it wasn't because I was bad. It was because I was, you know, feeling hurt. And what about, you know, these, and so it is related to trauma, like if the core beliefs, you know, I mean, there's really very little or no experience of like that I'm okay or like just chronic trauma.
It does make sense. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we have to start slowly. So with somebody with chronic trauma, and this is why, and also in our classes, in our group classes, I'm always teaching inner resource in every class or reviewing inner resource. And giving enough ground and inner resource so that if it's a drop-in class and there's a new person, or knowing that we're reviewing it again and again because it takes a while to really land. It's going to feel like it's changing for a while. It takes a while for it to feel stable. And for somebody who's experienced a lot of trauma, it's going to be elusive to feel a sense of ground or a sense of security. So that's why we say start with a sense of okayness. And we want to have that built in so that they may not yet feel I'm okay, but in this moment, I can have a brief reprieve, if you will. I can feel okayness here. And they start to build on that. Because what we're doing in this kosha, what the big shift is going to be, is this kosha, Vijnana Maya, is really the seat of where we would normally see through the I thought. So the greatest belief, the most prevalent belief on earth is what? I kind of just gave you a hint. But what would you imagine the most prevalent belief on earth, no matter where, what culture you're from, what background, what would be the most prevalent belief on earth? Just belief. I'm seeing some, I'm not good enough. I'm not loved. Let's break it down. Drop the not good enough or not loved. It's I. It's the belief in separation. That's the most prevalent belief. It's in the structure of our sense of being an ego I. In the sense that we're separate and there's other ego eyes out there. It's a belief. And I invite you to run the experiment, see. Because what we're shifting to in this understanding is how everything's about there's something wrong with me. Well, what if we start to track and we become sensitive? Then in our meditation, we realize that the I thought got glommed onto there's something wrong. What if it was just there's something wrong here? Can you see how that's very different when we were kids? Any child automatically has to, they just blame themselves, but really there was just something wrong. We feel off. We can feel it in our bodies, right? We're sensitizing ourselves to be able to track that even more subtly, even more earlier in the process. But what if you peel away the with me and you just recognize there's something off here? There's something wrong. There's something that doesn't feel right. And so we're starting to get before the there's something wrong with me. So I offer that to you because I talk about that with people when I, whether I have groups or whether I'm sitting with somebody one-on-one. It's a game changer. Because what we're opening up to in Vijnana Maya, in the traditional sense, this is where we would see through that sense of separation. Right? That's what would happen in the five kosha model. But Richard added on the sixth kosha, Smita Maya, because the I thought has been here for hundreds of thousands of years. It's built into our nervous system. It's part of what keeps us safe. We've needed to have an us-them mentality back when we were hunter-gatherers and there were tribes because we needed to figure out, you know, are we going to have lunch together or are you going to eat me for lunch? Right? I needed, sorry, I needed to know that I wasn't the same as the saber-toothed tiger that's running across the savannah. If I'm feeling the oneness, I'm going to get eaten really quickly. So we're not saying kill the I thought or kill the ego. That's not what this is about. We want to put the I thought in its appropriate place, though. We want to see it. Why? That's what I mean. We're understanding the natural functioning, how it serves us. But what we're also potentially opening into is who we are beyond that sense of separation. We know the I thought's a thought. You can see it move through your mind. And you're aware of it. Well, what's awareness feel like? What in the world is this that's here in which the I thought is coming and going? So the function of the six senses is to create separation, to help us navigate the world. And I would suggest that the I thought is a sixth sense. But the seventh sense deconstructs all sense of separation. And the seventh sense is the unicity that underlies the diversity when we're opening into that interconnected essence that we can feel but we can't grasp. It's undeniable yet ungraspable. It's something that emerges from the background, right? So was there any other questions? Did that help answer your question? Yeah, and we'll continue to talk about that this afternoon. Any other questions, Denny Shea, from online?
Not at this time.
Great, I'll keep going then. So with working with cognitions and this particular kosha where images and memories come up as well, we can proactively engage in all the same ways that we did yesterday. So like on page 77 in your reference guide, we have those ways of meeting and greeting emerging material. So where we're noting and welcoming cognitions, right? So that's where we peel back the conceptual label. We're not analyzing, we're not meeting it from a judgmental space. We're feeling it somatically. That's a profound movement to do that as we're meeting core beliefs or difficult memories, right? That in and of itself is profound. What's its texture? Those kind of things. We can welcome opposites, right? We can welcome opposites of cognitions so that we're feeling one, we're feeling another, we're moving back and forth, and then we're feeling both at the same time. We can take perspective, right? And taking perspective is when we're feeling back as a witness or a witnessing presence. So that's what we were doing yesterday in the co-meditation dyad worksheet. We were taking perspective as a witness or a witnessing presence. We can anthropomorphize. You know, if it were to walk in the room, what would it look like? Would it be amorphous? Would it be a blob? Would it be a tiger? Would it be some other animal? Would it be human? How old is it? And that allows us then to engage with it with a little bit of inner voice dialogue or having a conversation. And that's the what we call proactive engagement or the voice dialogue that we can do. We can have all kinds of dialogues with it. What does it want to say to us? What do we want to say to it? How close or how far does it need to be for us to feel safe with it being here in our meditation, in the room with us, right? Does it need to be on the other side of Mount Rainier? Does it need to be on the other side of the moon? Right? So these are all ways we can titrate our experience so that we're not flooded and overwhelmed. And then we have these three key questions. What does it want? What does it need? And what action is it asking us to take? That just gets at the heart of something. And oftentimes, what we want is very different than what we actually need. Right? So it's some great questions. And then, of course, we can weave in awareness itself, which we do in the protocol. So all those ways that we proactively engage, we can do that with cognitions, thoughts, beliefs, memories, and images. And that can be true in your personal practice, and that can be true in the group practice. So a little later on this morning, I'm going to work with core beliefs as well in the group practice. So again, this is where we would work through naturally that sense of separation in a five kosha model. And then once we do, we would be opening up more into anandamaya, into our bliss of feeling that sense of freedom, that sense of wholeness, that sense of our underlying essence that's timeless, spacious, that's complete and perfect, just as it is. You know, we'd be opening up and feeling this profound bliss that's uncaused, that just bubbles up by us feeling our essential nature. And then eventually that even needs to be seen through, because remember, a kosha is something that we identify with. It's something, it's a sheath or a layer that we take to be true. It's like a covering that covers up a light of our essential nature. Our essential nature, we can't put any conditioning on it. It's beyond all of these koshas, right? So here we are. We're opening into this. Then tomorrow we'll talk more about Smita Maya, where we take that second look. We take the second look, because the I thought is so sticky that it'll say, oh, I'm wholeness itself. I'm feeling, I'm spaciousness, I'm vast, right? And there's the sneakiness of the I thought. So we'll talk about that tomorrow. So that's why Richard brought that in, because after sitting with people that have been meditators for decades, he could feel how that was breaking through. But I'd love to prepare. Jennifer's going to do a co-meditation dyad demonstration here in a little bit after our break. And I'd love to talk about, and then you're going to be able to practice and pair off with a partner this morning. And we're going to work with beliefs, self-judgments, thoughts, memories. So what I'd love to do is talk about just briefly, what are we doing what you might feel when you're sitting in the co-meditation dyads. So we're learning to be comfortable with not knowing. You don't know what your partner is going to say and what's going to unfold. And so this is a process of learning to be in not knowing and learning to be comfortable with being in not knowing. Because ultimately, there's great freedom in not knowing. It's the I thought that appropriates everything and tries to control everything and feels like it needs to know so that it can make sure everything is in a nice, clean box with a bow on top, right? To make sure everybody's feeling good, which is part of being human. We want people to have, we want to feel happy. We want people to feel happy. I'm not denying that. But in this process, it's not about somebody being happy or having a good experience. We're supporting them to meet whatever needs to be met. And they may need to meet a sadness or a grief or a fear just long enough for it to unpack and reveal its deeper kernel of truth. And if we're trying to get them to feel better, they're going to miss that opportunity. And we all know what it feels like when we're grieving or we're struggling and we go to a friend and we just need them to listen. We need the space to be heard. And they try to fix us and try to give us answers of what we should be doing. That never feels good, right? So we're learning to be comfortable with not knowing. We're learning to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. We have to build our tolerance and our capacity to be uncomfortable, to sit with something that we don't know is going to happen, or something that maybe is out of our realm of experience. And for a moment, we need to meet that. It doesn't mean we need to meet it forever. But in this moment, we might need to meet it. We can ground into our own inner resource to support us while this person is sharing something, right? And then we may find a point where it's natural to come to an end. And then, you know, like Jennifer was saying, we don't have to meet what's super uncomfortable for us. We can refer people on, or we can get our own mentorship. So if we want to learn how to meet something, but we're learning how to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. We're learning how to be comfortable with being disoriented, right? Not quite sure where this is going. This feels a bit disorienting, feeling out of control. These are tricky things to learn how to be comfortable with, but that's what we're learning to do when we sit with somebody one-on-one. We're learning to be comfortable with waiting and with trusting. I want you to trust the protocol. That's why we're asking you to stay on these scripts and these worksheets. We know they work. And if you jump away from them too quickly, it's too easy to go into old habits that you don't realize that are not part of this protocol. And then you might find yourself in a bit of, oh, wow, I don't know what to do here. Whereas you can trust this protocol. And the way that you can learn to trust it is by using the scripts and the worksheets, right? And we're learning to be comfortable with allowing somebody else to lead, to take the driver's seat. We're surfing the waves along with them, okay? So I just wanted to cover that. And then also, you know, let's walk through the script briefly, so you know what's coming. This is what you're going to be working with, and this is what Jennifer's going to be working with. It looks very familiar at the beginning. It's on page 63 of your reference guide. The first six, or seven actually, are the exact same, right? It's the exact same essence of what we've been doing since Anamaya and what we did yesterday. It's just instead of asking about emotions on number two, we're asking if there's a particular thought, belief, self-judgment, image, or memory. Okay? Now, the rest of it, we just put when you identify with this belief as true, because a lot of times beliefs are what comes up for people. But if they're working with a different thought, or if they're working with a memory, you would say memory instead of belief. But oftentimes it's a belief. So that's why we, just to make it easy, we didn't want to have to put in this worksheet, thought, belief, memory, you know, it would have been, anyway, laborious. You get the gist. So that's what we're asking about. And it's okay to ask at a certain point. Number three, we ask, as you feel this, what else do you notice? And we could say, for instance, are there any other images, memories, or emotions that accompany this belief? We're not saying, look for an emotion. Do you see how directive or imposing that is? That's very different than, as you're feeling this, just notice, is there any emotion or other image that might be arising along with it? And there may not be. Do you see how I said, and there may not be? Because there may not be. But what we're doing is we're asking them to dive in. And this is just a skillful question because it's allowing them to unfurl those layers, unpack those layers. Because remember, the koshas co-arise together. So anyway, that's how that's similar. And then where it comes different is when we ask them if they'd like to try something new. Now, remember, 1 through 7, you may cycle through that a couple times before you get to a point where you get to 8. And today with 8, 9, 10, 11, that's where we're working with opposites. So opposites may naturally arise, and they often do. But if they haven't arisen for the purposes of practicing and learning how to work with that, that's why we have this in here. So even if you're the person who's receiving hasn't brought up an opposite, there'll be a time where you'll ask if there was an opposite, what might it be? And to feel into that, to notice what's arising. And then you feel one, and then you go back and feel the other, and then you go back and forth, and then you invite them to feel both at the same time. Now, we can't think our way. If you're up in your head cognitively about two emotions or two memories or two beliefs that you're opposites of belief, you can't hold both at the same time because we can't have two thoughts simultaneously. So it'll feel like you're going back and forth really fast. But if you're feeling somatically these in your body, then you're absolutely going to be able to feel both at the same time. That's what we're trying to get at. It's not thinking, it's feeling our way. We can feel both of our hands at the same time. We can feel our stomach and the crown of our head at the same time. So that's why we somatically anchor where we feel and what the somatic experience is, the feeling, that felt sense with one belief, and then we feel the somatic visceral feeling with the other. When we move back and forth, when we feel both, we feel simultaneously both of those areas in the body. And the other places, they might happen in the same part of the body. You might have opposites that are arising in the heart, but we can feel those, okay? And then the integration is the same. We do have some debrief questions here in the worksheet that I want to point out to you. We invite you to use if you haven't seen them already. Here they are. They're on page 71. And so now you can use these after group teaching and definitely after the co-meditation dyad. So, you can start by the receiver actually asking the facilitator first, how was that for you? Right? That gives the receiver more time to just kind of integrate what's happened, but it also gives the facilitator time to reflect, what was that like for me to offer this, right? And then the facilitator could ask the receiver, did my intervention support you to deepen into your experience? Did I offer anything, or did anything I offer feel directive or take you out of your experience? That's really good to know. And then, how was my pacing? Did you have enough space to inquire? Was there enough room? Remember to invite people. Don't say, now, don't be directive with it, but invite people. Okay, if it feels right, feel that. Take some time to feel that. We want to give them an opportunity to feel. That way, whatever wants to be revealed is going to be revealed. That allows them to tell you what's going on next. You don't have to direct. But if then they're feeling for a while and you haven't heard anything, you could ask the next question, right? What's arising as you're meeting this? You have those simple questions that we've pointed out that are in your reference guide as well. Okay, so that's what you can use to debrief. The other thing I want to remind you, hold on. It's tricky holding a mic. On page 66, this is the way that you would set up a page to write with. Like I usually have just a page in a notebook, and I divvy up my page this way where I can track the coaches on the left side, the process notes, we're just using one word of what they're sharing, and then I'm bracketing my experience over to the right. So we haven't talked about this yet too much, but today while Jennifer is working with the worksheet, and you can have that in front of you, you might want to have your own sheet of paper. So you're tracking, you're jotting down the words that the person is saying. You don't have to jot down everything because you'll be here. Just a word, that just a cup, you know, each essence word of what they're saying here and there so that you can stay connected, but you can repeat back so that they can deepen, and you've all felt what it feels like to hear your words back, right? If really you feel seen and heard. But you could start tracking while Jennifer's doing this, track the koshas. And you can write Anna, A-N-N-A, for, or just body, if you don't know the Sanskrit yet. Energy, emotion, belief, 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 sensation, sensation. And then if something comes up and it sounds like an opposite, don't just presume it's an opposite. Put a little arrow between two. Like you'll see my sheet. I've got an arrow from up here in the sheet and an arrow, like a line from up here that goes to a line down here. It's like a little arrow, and I'll put opposite with a question mark. And then I'll ask them, as you're feeling this, does this feel like an opposite? It may or may not. And then if they say yes, then I could ask, would you like to work with this? And then we're off and running, right? But you'll have your worksheet. We're, you know, follow along. But if you want to try to track that just for practice while Jennifer's doing it, you know, you can do that. Okay? All right, great. So we're going to take a break. Jennifer will come back, bring us into the Vijnana Maya Dyad, co-meditation dyad demo. And during the break, if you'd like, for those of you that are here in person, you might want to choose a partner for later on. Yeah. Thanks, everybody.